You're listening to Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Mariners have won 7 in a row. They're a half game back in the American League West, and they just completed what was a rousing weekend. A couple of years ago, the Mariners had a good season, and it just seemed that every time they were able to marshal up some enthusiasm, some momentum, they would come home and just fall on their faces at home. This has been one of the most exciting things about this season is that when they've generated that kind of momentum, they've paid it off. That was a great weekend series against the Royals. Here you got a holiday week with 4th of July coming on Wednesday. They've got the Angels coming into town. And this team has been able to sort of steady what looked like it was going to be a rough East Coast road swing. And now they bounce back. They got their season-long 7-game win streak going.
Yeah, I was looking through the schedule going, okay, what was the worst part of their season so far? Because that road swing, I mean, it's tough winning on the road. Those two teams both have the best home record in all of baseball, and you still were able to go 5-5, albeit it included sweeping the Orioles, who are not a good team. But earlier at home, it was in mid-April, they went 1-3 against Houston. I suppose that was a little bit discouraging, but you're right. You haven't had that like that's what Houston just did. They lost 3-4 in Tampa. Not a great team. I mean, we haven't really seen that kind of meltdown. Really, the only bad streaks have been against really good teams, against Jim's super teams.
The super teams,
yeah. And you look at it, and so the Yankees, Red Sox, and the Astros are the super teams, and yet, what do you call the Mariners? I don't know where I came up with super teams.
Sub-super.
Writing something. And I
pretty
thought,
good
well,
teams.
They're really good teams. And you look at Seattle now, and you look at the Mariners, 54-31. They're right there. It's so funny because I really don't think they're going to beat Houston to be the AL West champions. I know that you still do. And hopefully you're right and I'm wrong again. But they're only two games away from having the best record in the entire league. And so they could go from... I mean, our expectations right now, and I still think that, boy, if you could just be the second wild card, just get into the playoffs, I don't care how you make it, second wild card, back in March, down in Peoria, you're thinking, okay, if the Mariners could get the second wild card, great. You could go for first wild card and get the home field, and then that would make everyone happy that doesn't think that the wild card game is a playoff game because you're playing into the playoffs or whatever that nonsense is. But now you could also make a case that the Mariners could play for the best record and, you know, just have the whole enchilada, so to speak.
I like it when you say they go for. Like they're, you know what, I don't really want to go for the division. We want to go for the game, one-game playoff.
I mean, do you think are they as good as the Yankees? They're not. I mean, we saw them get swept by the Yankees, and yet – maybe the Yankees will come to Seattle in September and the Mariners will sweep them here.
Well, you mentioned the biggest surprise in Zunino, and this is in defense of Mike Zunino's 188 average, of how well he's handled this rotation. Do you think there was a step taken over the weekend? Because you had Marco go a complete game. Paxton, man, some of those strikeouts he got yesterday, he got 10 Ks yesterday, which is the seventh time he's done that. And one of the strikeouts that he had, I think it was top of the fourth, his slider, getting Moustakas to swing at that, and I don't know how many times Aaron Goldsmith said that was a weak wave because it was just disappearing. And for Mike Moustakas, I mean, I was looking at, okay, well, what kind of hitter? He's got 16 home runs. He's a .258 hitter, and he made him look foolish. I don't know. I feel like Paxton maybe took that sort of all-star leap, and if he continues on this path and worked himself out of another tough spot, two on and nobody out, he goes strikeout, another strikeout with a really good slider, and then he gets a pop-up out of it. So that's the part I think that, you know, going out, if they can stay healthy, and that's the thing we were worrying about on Friday, like who is Jerry Dipoto going to go and get, because they're all in on this. They believe this is a playoff team. But I don't know. Those two pitchers just, I thought, That was a step taken. Even, you know, it's against Kansas City, but still, they're pretty aggressive. I want to say they have one of the lowest strikeout numbers in Major League Baseball.
Watching what Paxton did, it's become one of my – there are different things that I love watching D. Gordon on the base paths, obviously. Watching how he'll turn it loose. I love watching Paxton when he gets late in a game. And Service mentioned it yesterday that when he gets late into a game where he knows that maybe, hey, this is the last inning I'm going to be out there, that he turns it loose. And you see the life that he has on his fastball. And all of a sudden, he's in the eighth inning yesterday, and he's still throwing 98 miles an hour as he ended up pitching through the eighth. The fact that...
Pitch, swing, and a pop-up into left field. Gamble coming in. He is there and will make the catch, and that will retire the side. And I'm telling you, folks, the American Bald Eagle has never been more popular here in Seattle since it landed on the right shoulder of a tall Canadian by the name of James Paxton. A standing ovation for Paxton as he walks over to the Mariners' first base dugout. That's it for the Royals at the top of the eighth.
Watching when he does get and just decides, okay, this is it, just cut it loose, it's one of my favorite things to watch.
Did anybody see one of those bobbleheads?
Yeah.
I thought I saw a little kid trying to take the eagle off. He took the eagle off the shoulder, and his brother came over to grab it, and he did one of those things like where he pulls his arm away. They were showing it during the break on Root Sports. I still am amazed by that whole scene where Paxton, how cool he was when that eagle tried to land on him. Honestly, I know it's silly, but and I think a lot of people agree. I know Rick Riz was saying things about it, but that meant something.
Who? I thought so too.
Who did you? Because
he just seems calm, composed,
ice water in his veins.
Yeah, I mean, like, how would you have reacted? Do you think? I think I would have been like, "Whoa, get that thing!" I might have run away, or I don't know.
Yeah, he even talked about how he felt the talons. I mean, he could feel them going into him. Yeah, I would have run.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would have been running.
That's what I would have thought. That yeah, I don't want this thing landing on me.
I'm worried that I would have swatted at it, and then that would have created a whole new because man versus eagle. Like if the eagle got mad at you, you'd be toast. Like it would absolutely be able to cause some damage and peck away at you.
Well, how about if he had like turned around and hit it with his glove? I mean, here's the image of a Canadian taking a swat at our national bird. I mean, that would have been a bad scene for
him. It would have been, but everybody would have understood, don't you think?
I don't know, man. I don't know if you recover from that. What do you remember about Dave Winfield or Randy Johnson? Randy Johnson just hit a bird with a pitch, and I still remember that.
Well, he didn't mean to do that, though.
Yeah.
What are the odds that
intention doesn't really matter that it's there. Dave Winfield hit a pigeon. Yeah, I think that the composure that he had that was there. We've talked to Paxton and gotten to see how he's done. I agree. He's taken a step forward. I worried when he had that cramp in that game. What was it, against Tampa Bay?
Mm-hmm.
Where he had the cramp and then he ended up pitching through five innings and then he had starts against Boston and against the Yankees that weren't as good. I wondered, is he hurt? Like that was really kind of what came through my – those are two of the better hitting teams in the league. They're super teams, for crying out loud. And
they
I think
are
that
super
since
teams.
Then,
yeah, that's right.
It's been answered pretty definitively that Paxton is absolutely okay. He should be in the All-Star game. He's as good as any pitcher in the league right now. The Mariners have an ace.
Well, they do, and we'll see if he ends up making it in the All-Star game. It's going to be more difficult for him. I think Diaz for sure will be there. Hopefully Haniger, too, and others are certainly you could make a case for them. But you look, don't you feel like when the Mariners, when they're not playing one of these super teams, when they're not playing the Yankees, Boston, or Houston, don't you feel like they're going to win every game? I mean, you go into it now, and it's like I used to have, you know, a feeling, oh, man, Felix is pitching tonight. I'm not so sure if they're going to get it done. And yet you look at it now, and you think, okay, how are they going to win? It's not, boy, I hope they win tonight. It's how are they going to win tonight? And they seem to find a different way, and it's a different player. I mean, we talked about Healy earlier going 4-for-4 Saturday night, had the home run, three runs batted in, and it just is somebody different. They do it in a different way every night, and yet you always feel like they're going to get it done now. I'm sitting here going, okay, it's a seven-game winning streak. You got the Angels coming in here. You swept them a couple weeks ago, and they come in just as banged up as they were when they were here before. They're down right around 500, and the A's overtaking them as your closest pursuer for that wild card berth, and so why not another sweep of the Angels?
Absolutely love to see it. It is Danny, Dave, and Moore, the other piece of news we're reacting to today. And it's not, this wasn't surprising that Cam Chancellor's walking away. I think, I know going back to last season, pretty much as soon as it happened, we all were told that kind of it's not a question of when he's going to be back, but if he's going to be back. And now it's pretty evident that he won't be back. We'll open up the phone lines now if you want to call in with your thoughts on what he meant to this franchise, or whether you had a favorite hit of his, 206-400-0985. 421-3776. I remember the first time that I noticed Cam and the way he hit a player, and it was a game in Cleveland, and it was 2011, which is kind of the, in many ways, like the transitional year. Tavares Jackson was the starting quarterback. Charlie Whitehurst started that game. It was the one out of Pete Carroll's first six seasons here that they didn't make the playoffs. But he had a hit on Montario Hardesty, who was a running back. And that was a year where Cam hadn't started as a rookie. Lawyer Malloy was the starting strong safety. And remember seeing the way that Cam played. And of all the different players and personalities on this team, it seemed like Cam was kind of the one who in some ways got overlooked. I was kind of surprised when he got the contract extension in 2012, thinking, like, wow, I'm glad that he got extended and got a new contract, but I wasn't sure that the Seahawks were going to do it for that player. And then when they get to the Super Bowl, it was like, I voted for him for MVP, and a couple years later when he held out, like, at each turn, it seemed like, I don't know if we ever regarded Cam Chancellor as one of the league's best players. And he absolutely was, and one of the most important players on this team.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that. I remember that contract we were doing. That was the first year of our show, I think, when we were doing that. I remember thinking, I don't know that you give him that. He had struggled in pass coverage. Middle of the field, tight ends beating him every once in a while, and he vastly improved once he got that contract. And part of that is just becoming a professional and playing up to, okay, they're giving me this responsibility, this amount of money, my leadership, my skills, everything needs to step up, and he did. Your favorite tackle, Danny, that one will win the award every time for the highest degree of difficulty. Because Montario Hardesty, is that his name? I mean, he's running in the open field. And getting an open field tackle in the NFL, you're hoping just to get a hold of a shoelace. And he barreled him up, Jim. He squared him up. And that's hard to do, man. Open field tackle in the way that he, and again with the exploding shoulder pads, is that, you know, he's able to get this pop from very little momentum. He didn't have any. He was basically standing there just waiting. But the other thing that's great about Cam is his feet. Once he makes contact, his feet start moving, and that's part of it. But that tackle, that was really fun to watch. And as far as a difficult one, my favorite is either of the hits on the offensive lineman. The one hit on Mike Iupati when it was playing at CenturyLink, just a pulling guard, 330 pounds. Cam's given up 100 pounds to this guy and puts him on his back and on the meat wagon. You know, we're happy that Iupati's not injured. And then the other one to Eric Winston, that was 2012 or 13, where he comes up and takes on an offensive lineman. I mean, there's not DBs. What DB can do that? And even, I'll challenge you, in the history of the NFL, and I know a lot of people will come up. The professor had a good one, David Fulcher, who was a guy that played around the time that I played, who was a big, strong safety at Arizona State, played for the Bengals. But I've never seen anybody come up and take on an offensive lineman. And the only reason I mention that is because he has the whole range of picking off Cam Newton, running 90 yards for a touchdown, making all the plays that he makes downfield, plus the ability to make those plays. I think it makes him the most diverse, as far as talent goes, player in the NFL, and I'd say maybe even in the history of the NFL.
You know what I like too, and I'm watching video of it right now, is when he was leaping over the line of scrimmage to try and block Graham Gano's field goal attempts there, and it causing the NFL to change the rules.
He did it twice, right?
Yes, he did.
He did it twice. The first one, they ruled no play. Is that right?
I can't remember why that play was. Did they call a timeout, or somebody called a timeout or something right?
Well, the first one, he completely missed it. I don't know how he did, because he was in there in time to get it, but Gano somehow got it by him, and I'm not sure if they blew the whistle on that or not. I mean, they're showing that the field goal was good, but no, I thought that was cool. Just showed his athletic ability, too. I mean, he wasn't just a hard hitter, but Dave, you talked about it, his pass coverage. I mean, he got better at that, and so to have the versatility that he had to be able to, you know, cover guys in pass routes, and then to be able to deliver hits and help in run stopping, and so just a fantastic player all the way around.
Let's go to Chris in Spanaway. Chris, what's up?
Taking my call, you guys. I was thinking today about this, and I just wanted to point this out, how eerie it is that the two most physical safeties to ever play in Seattle, Ken Easley and Cam Chancellor, their careers almost mirrored each other from their physicality to to their presence on the field, all the way down to the reasons why their careers were shortened, to the length of their careers. I mean, it's eerie how they mirror each other. My favorite play, though, is the tackle against Vernon Davis. I mean, every 49er fan that you talk to will tell you that Vernon Davis was never the same after that hit. And just to add insult to injury, he did it the very next year again and laid him out again. And then Vernon Davis left the West Coast and went to Washington, D.C. I mean,
not only that, he started opening up like art museums and stuff.
Doing ceramics or
his
pottery.
His sensitive side came out after that.
Yeah, you don't think that would have happened if it weren't for the
No, it jarred something loose, a creative.
Thanks for taking my call, you guys.
Thank you very much, Chris. Here is the play that he's talking about.
Throw down the right side. Man, is there wide open? Slipping down was Sherman. Flags all over the place on Cam Chancellor, who absolutely unloaded on the receiver who caught the ball at the two. I think that was Vernon Davis. It looked like a clean shot. And Vernon Davis isn't sure where he is. It is a first down. Going to be a penalty, but Vernon Davis is going to remember that.
Couple things here. First, that game, it's 2012. The Seahawks have just won three straight games, including the past two, they'd scored more than 50 points. So they'd hit this turning point in Russell Wilson's rookie season. It's there in December. It's a Sunday night game against San Francisco, which was sort of the bully at that point in the division. The team that had won the division the year before was on the way to, they'd end up going to the Super Bowl that year. But Seattle won that game by 29 points, and it was a third down play. And then after the hit, you immediately see three flags that basically, one's thrown from by the official that's right there on the sideline. Two more come arcing in. And it's basically like, that hit looked too hard to be legal. Like that was the reaction, was that you can't hit a guy that hard. You're not allowed to hit them that hard anymore.
And yet, wasn't it a legal hit?
It was a totally legal hit. He was not fined for it.
But you know what? They got karma, or justice was served, because they end up stopping them. And they went to kick a field goal, and Red Bryant blocked it, and Sherm took it to the house.
That's exactly right. It kicked off a 29-point victory. And really, that was – it was the next season the Seahawks broke through and won the division, but that was the turning point in the division. That was sort of Seattle's statement that they were a force and here to be reckoned with, and in that point became, in some ways, kind of the new bullies in the NFC West.
Yeah, and really the problem was they couldn't win down in San Francisco. And that was a turning point. And it's a lot of his leadership and a lot of, I think, his confidence and then just playmaking. But, you know, we talked earlier about setting the tone, something that maybe sometimes gets cliche, especially when you play. You know, coaches will try to say that all the time. But he was a tone setter. And it was just I would say the same thing on the other side of the ball with Marshawn Lynch. He was a guy that fired the sidelines up, and same thing with Cam Chancellor. It's one of those you look at and go, wow, look at that. And also, you know, he's a physical specimen. He looks like, I feel like Cam Chancellor could enter bodybuilding, you know, contests, but usually those guys, the old saying, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane, but he's not only intimidating looking, especially with that dark shield that he would wear, but he also just was plain intimidating.
Go to Don in Edgewood. Don, what's going on?
Hey, guys. It's so hard to sum it all up, but, you know, Cam, I always called him Cam the Chancellor, and he and Marshawn were dual battering rams, offense and defense. But I guess all overall it was his demeanor, that he was just this kind of quiet guy, but had that pop that, you know, commanded respect. He didn't need to, you know, the loud mouth or whatever, you know. Football to me has always been heart and guts, and with Cam and Marshawn, we had the guts to back up all those young players with the chip on the shoulders and the magic of Russell. It was just so special.
Don, did you have a favorite hit that he had?
No, you know, actually, it's not the hit. It was the interception return against the Carolina game, that 80-yard return.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you very much, Don. Appreciate that. That Carolina game was probably – that was probably his best game. I mean, that was the game where he jumps over the line of scrimmage twice. He has a pick that was shown there. He also hit Tolbert in that game. That was where he clobbered him.
Yeah. The fat kid. The fat kid got taken down. And I think it was an open field situation, too.
Yeah, it was. Jessamyn McIntyre, our producer, did a great job of putting together a montage of not just some of Cam's great moments, but you'll hear from some of his teammates, including a few guys that aren't here anymore. Hope you enjoy this, sort of a testament to what Cam Chancellor accomplished in his 8 years as a Seahawk.
Let's turn it like we do, man. Let's take this on the road and do what we do, baby. L.O.B. 1, 2, 3.
Hit me.
Ready for step?
Lock down.
Wee's down.
Turn up.
Stafford takes the snap, looks left, fires inside, ball's caught by Johnson. He gets in the end zone, he fumbles in the end zone. The ball comes out of the back of the end zone. The official says it's a touchback.
We feed off Cam. You know, he go out there making big hits. You see how he hit Tolbert. Tolbert, what, 5'10", 260? And Cam dropped him like he was 185.
Newton steps up. His arm is hit as he throws. It's intercepted. It's Cam Chancellor who picks it up. He gets up off the ground. He fights his way inside the 35.
Cam mean everything to the defense. He's the heart and soul with those hits. Man, that makes our defense ride out, and that's something we need to do.
Pass down the far side. Reaching up. Ball's tipped up. Do the Seahawks come down with it inbounds? Do they come down? Mr. Fisher, they do. Leaping up, making the interception.
Cam Chancellor.
Way to go, Bam Bam, as he reaches up. And that is going to seal the deal.
He a beast, man. You know, I never met nobody as big and as strong as him.
It is Seattle's ball at the 40-yard line of Minnesota. The Seahawks defenders are going nuts on the near side. Great job by the Seahawks. Cam Chancellor ripping it out. Ataba Rubin falling on it.
Big-time players make big-time plays in big-time games, and that's exactly what he did.
Ball is intercepted. Coming back the near side. He's going to go. It is Cam Chancellor. They are not going to touch it. 15, 10, 5. He strides in. Cam Chancellor. Touchdown, Seahawks.
He's grown tremendously in his leadership role. He's really taken ownership of it. People really respect him. You know, when he opens his mouth, you know, even me, I'm going to listen, you know, because I respect what he has to say. And I think that's the biggest thing I see out of Cam. He's really owning up to being a real leader.
Flags all over the place on Cam Chancellor, who absolutely unloaded on the receiver who caught the ball at the 2. I think that was Vernon Davis. It looked like a clean shot. But 2 flags fell. Oh, my goodness, what a shot by Cam Chancellor. And those flags came out instantly. And Vernon Davis isn't sure where he is.
Cam is the type of guy that he prepares great. He comes out with the philosophy, and he wants to knock the lights out. That's his mentality. And I think he just comes out and he plays that way.
Ball sailed. Ball's intercepted at the 40-yard line. Cam Chancellor.
There's really no weakness in his game.
4-man rush. Wentz has time. Throws. Ball is picked off. Cam Chancellor at the 35. Far side of the field.
I don't know when my career stopped, but, you know, this gives me another 3-4 years. And who knows what happens after that? You know, nobody can say what's going to happen in 3 or 4 years, but it does solidify 3 or 4 more years for me.
Let's turn it like we do, man. Let's take this on the road and do what we do, baby. L.O.B. 1, 2, 3.
Hit me.
Ready for step?
Lock down.
Wee's down.
Turn up.
One of the players that was the most fun to watch on a defense that was historically great, not going to be playing for the Seattle Seahawks again. I think we're all going to miss watching Cam Chancellor play. The Mariners riding the season-high 7-game win streak. Should you add a starting pitcher to this mix? Not the way they've been throwing recently. We'll talk about that next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
The best thing about this Mariners team has been their starting pitching. And that was, in many ways, the biggest concern. And that gets to kind of the heart of one of the questions they're going to have to answer is, as we move toward the trade deadline and the Mariners are in position where they are going to be looking to add, starting pitching would seem to be the spot to do it, and maybe somebody like Cole Hamels. Yet, I don't know if you've got somebody you'd want to bump out of the rotation right now. Does the way Seattle's starters have pitched so far make you reluctant to say that's, hey, what they should go and get right now?
No, just because I think you need to get insurance. But you do run the risk of possibly, you know, upsetting the culture and the chemistry and everything. Because we've talked about this with Robinson Cano. And Taylor Jacobs is the one that brought this up. Like, do you put him back in? I mean, they're doing really well without him. And it's, you know, after his 80-game suspension, I think it's the target is like August 14th or 15th, something like that. He's not eligible to play in the playoffs. So if you, I mean, I can see from Jerry DePoto's standpoint, look, you want to get an extra arm in there just in case. But, you know, yeah, you pose a great question. Who do you bump out?
Well, right
what
now.
What the hell's so funny, Danny?
The Warriors have just added Boogie Cousins.
The Warriors? I'm glad they did that. That might screw things
That's
up.
That's your favorite
him.
Player.
It is.
That's your favorite
player. And it's going
player
to my
favorite
team.
What would they? Why do they need him?
They don't. It's so awesome.
What's awesome about it?
Because Boogie's a head case, and he's completely super talented, and he's going to go play for the Warriors. It's fantastic.
You still have the shooter that you don't like too?
No, Swaggy P. Swaggy P's gone. It was a one-year deal, $5.2 million. So apparently Boogie Cousins is going to now go play with the Golden State Warriors.
That's interesting that that comes up, and we're just talking about upsetting the apple cart and possibly a chemistry problem.
Yeah, we're going to bring on a headache, but I'll tell you what, he's a really, really talented player, so that'll be interesting. That do you worry about, and getting back to the Mariners and adding a starting pitcher, do you worry about, you wouldn't, there's nobody you would want to move ahead. Right now, if you were forced to replace one starting pitcher, it'd be Felix, which you're not going to do right now. But you also know that depth is an issue on your starting rotation.
Well, DePoto was talking about it too, where, yeah, you want to find another guy to help. And Felix has this potential, who knows, with his back, because he has a stiff back, and he had to stand in the dugout between innings, and they were only expecting five innings from him, some lower body workout that caused this. And so we'll see if he can make his next start on Friday.
Well, you don't even need to specify that it was a lower body workout. Every person who's crossed the age of 30 knows what it's like to have a back that gets tweaked, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Especially pitchers, because they're such delicate human beings, apparently. They can't even field a grounder like this O'Day kid in Baltimore pulls a hamstring just running, 12 feet to go get a grounder?
Tanaka, the Yankees pitcher, pulled both his hamstrings running the bases. He pulled both
Jeez,
of them.
What
do you think the response was to everybody when a pitcher pulled both of his hamstrings running the bases?
Response? Oh, that they shouldn't be running the bases and
get rid of just have the DH.
Have the DH.
Yeah. Let's get rid of hitting pitchers entirely because they can't be reasonably expected to run the bases without pulling both of their hamstrings. See what's happened now?
I forget where you are on that. We're talking about National League rules and the DH.
Oh, I can't. I hate watching pitchers hit for the most part because they're not in the major leagues as hitters. They shouldn't be in the batter's box as hitters. That's where I've always come on that.
Come around on the idea. I used to be very passionate that the DH was an abomination, kind of along the lines of the old school AstroTurf that used to be in those multi-use stadiums like Riverfront and Three Rivers and all of those things. Like, I thought it was an absolute abomination that you shouldn't get an exception because you can't do something. Like, you don't get an exception if you're a linebacker who can't drop into pass coverage. So they're like, oh, we'll have someone run out onto the field if they're going to throw the ball instead of that. I've come around that I see the use of the DH, but I don't really.
You're still old school, though? You still believe in?
I do not want to see the National League incorporate the DH.
Well, last week we talked about it because El Diablo and Tom Wassel had a conversation about it. And what El Diablo thought was that, you know, you talk to people in the National League cities. Yeah, I mean, they're dedicated to that, and they would hate having the DH.
What do you think of it?
I kind of like it. I'm against all of the specialization because, you know, and this is why these pitchers, they should not be pulling hamstrings and groins and stuff just because they run. I mean, it makes me wonder, like, what are we, should we put them in glass or in bubble wrap and just have them, you know, do not open for 5 days, and then they just go out and pitch, and they can't do anything else?
Well, you can't talk to them on the day they pitch, too.
That's also a fact. What about, you know, running and covering bases? I mean, come on, man. You got to be part of the team. You're a baseball player. And so they kind of fall into the category of kickers.
No.
Yeah, they do. They're
starting like kickers, too. Leave the pitchers alone. Well, I don't know.
Have you ever seen a kicker field? Well, we saw it.
Hauschka.
Remember Hauschka when he gave that guy – he gave him his nipples. He's like standing straight up like a honeymoon, whatever. Anyway, so.
You just like that word, don't you, Danny? Yeah, Danny's got the silent laugh going right now.
Remember when Mark Schlereth said, hey, I've got a new there's a new sponsorship for him, and he put a target on his chest. I mean, come on, the kickers, they're the pitchers are going that way, though, and that's why I like seeing, like, Shohei Ohtani, and look, Mike Leake, I mean, he's not a big dude. He's only 170 pounds. He's hit 6 home runs.
Leake and Marco Gonzalez are really good athletes. Like, watching both of them pitch.
Yeah.
And they've talked about, I know Shannon's talked about them being two of the better athletes.
Felix is a good athlete, really. You watch his pickoff move the other day. He is so quick on Saturday night when they turn back the clock night. But, yeah, I mean, I just think that they should be required to be athletes, at least somewhat of athletes.
Like Bartolo Colon? You make an exception for him?
Hey, have you seen him run? I mean, he's a hustler.
The other thing
I don't see him pulling hamstrings.
You also get the benefit of, like, watching Bartolo Colon hit. Like, if we lived in a world where the DH was universal, we would have never seen Bartolo Colon hit in a major league game, and I think we'd all be worse off for that.
That's true. Okay, but getting back to what the Mariners need, another pitcher, don't you think, like, with Felix or with LeBlanc or Marco Gonzalez, as much as we like Marco, you worry about his innings piling up, and DePoto talked about that last week too. Be nice to have some depth there. You got some in-house candidates, though. Erasmo, there's good signs with Erasmo. He threw a bullpen yesterday, and he's got another bullpen scheduled on Wednesday. Iwakuma, not a setback again. We always hear that with Iwakuma. I don't think he's going to be coming back. But Bergman, Miranda, Roenis Elias, I mean, there's some in-house options there, but the best one being Hamels, if they could somehow pry him away from Texas and get him here. But I think they're going to need something, whether it's a Felix injury, whether you want to guard against too many innings for Gonzalez, there'd be some reason why you're hoping that they bring another pitcher in.
Bart Colon's got he's got one home run. Bartolo Colon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Only one, though.
He got into that one. He ran into it. It is Danny David Moore. We'll tell you, biggest surprise for this Mariners season, it's not a guy who's pitching it. We'll tell you who it is next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Welcome back to Danny, Dave, and Moore. Lots of news today, and of course, good things to talk about with the Mariners. Having won, what are we, 7 straight now?
7 in a row, sweeping the Orioles on the road there at Baltimore, and then coming home, taking care of Kansas City. And you got the Angels coming in for 3 tomorrow, followed by the Rockies. I'm looking forward to seeing the Rockies.
Yeah, and then it goes Rockies, Angels again. So the 4 series coming up are just those 2 teams.
I think the Angels can rebound. They're still missing Ohtani. But that idea, are they going to be able to bounce back? Because they're now in 4th place in the division. And the American League West has quietly become baseball's best division.
Yeah. Well, I think earlier we were talking about how LeBron James going to the Lakers, and in no other sport can you have one guy influence the team. But if there's anybody that's close to that, it's Mike Trout.
Trout's unbelievable.
He is unbelievable. It's like you hear about him. And, you know, you're looking at like a Bryce Harper's really good too, but there's no way. I mean, coming out of this era, it's going to be all about Mike Trout.
It's amazing watching him when he hits those low pitches. I mean, he just drives them out of the park.
He's a bad ball hitter.
I don't know. I would still think that the Angels at some point, if they get healthy, they've got 7 players on the 60-day DL, and it just seems like they're too banged up to make a run here. And yet, I don't take the A's seriously. I don't know why. I love their third baseman, Chris Davis.
Chapman's a really good player.
I know they have good players, but I just completely dismiss them, and I probably shouldn't.
The fact that, well, it'll be interesting. The Angels last time here were swept by the Mariners that will be there. The one thing we're going to talk about, the biggest surprises for the Mariners this season. I loved Ben Gamel, and not just because he looked by far the best of anybody on Turn Ahead the Clock night. Like the sleeveless approach, like
way ahead of Cruz.
Cruz was impressive just for the sheer like size of the 24-inch pythons that were going to be running wild on you. But Gamel, just the overall, I don't know if it was,
but like you said,
the decor or the ambiance that I liked more.
He looked more like a throwback player than a throw ahead player, though.
It was fantastic, and then he had the triple that was there, and he's been look Ben Gamel when they traded for Denard Span. I thought that was the sound of the clock ticking on Ben Gamel. And I think maybe the Mariners thought that too, not in ruling out what he would be able to do, but he hadn't hit all that well. He had kind of, in some ways topped out with the Yankees, where they didn't see him as part of their franchise going forward, and traded him, even though he was the reigning MVP in the league that he played in, the AAA league. And all he's done since they've acquired Span is absolutely hit the cover off of the ball, which, by the way, Denard Span's been really good too. And now all of a sudden you've got, I think of all the different possibilities the Mariners considered, I don't know if they were really thinking about the one that they've currently got, which is that you've got D. Gordon at second base. You have Denard Span and Ben Gamel playing good enough to be everyday outfielders. Mitch Haniger being an all-star level player. And kind of the question now is Heredia going to be able to do that? And if he's not, what do you do in center field?
Well, and the thing is, you know, you've got a little bit of a drop-off there with Heredia. Still love watching that guy play, but you know, you get picked up by a 4-for-4 night from Ryan Healy, or you know, Ben Gamel's run. This is ridiculous what he's done. His first 12 games, you point out, Jim, wasn't at spring training. So like the first part of April was, or the last part of April was his spring training. He came out of April batting 121. He got 4 hits in 12 games. Since then, since the beginning of May, 346 average. And he's a great fielder. He's got 8 RBIs. He's not a huge power hitter, but he's just been on a huge tear. And I think I'm pretty sure there was a couple of other players, but Ben Gamel was the one guy that Jerry DePoto pointed out when I asked him, who's the most pleasant surprise? Because you don't want to ask who's the biggest surprise, because then that means, well, I never thought that much of him in the first place. He thought Ben Gamel could play, but he said as far as what he's doing, it's above and beyond.
Well, in the rotation, who's been the most pleasant surprise, Gonzalez or LeBlanc?
It's got to be LeBlanc, doesn't it? I mean, Marco came with this whole thing that, you know, look, he's a great athlete. He's young. You traded away your best hitter in your minor league program to get him. And I don't know, the expectations there, whereas Wade LeBlanc, I mean, it's like some kind of a resurrection.
Something about found money in your pocket or...
That's what I like to
Danny
say.
Danny said that.
He's yeah. Now a $50 bill that you found in the pocket of an old pair of pants. It used to be $20. Now it's a $50. It's a full evening out with the lady.
What's said more often, that or hot tub time machine?
Hot tub time machine has really fallen off. Like, I haven't gone to that one. I was shamed out of using that one. But the $50, the found money that is there. The difference, I think Gonzalez is more important, but LeBlanc is more surprising. The reason Gonzalez is more important is that we all forget that when this season started, I don't want to say the jury was out on Jerry DePoto, but I think everybody would have looked at it and said, he makes a lot of trades. I don't know if he's made the right ones. And, man, Marco Gonzalez didn't look all that great last year, and it was your best hitting prospect you gave up in Tyler O'Neill. Now you see how Marco's pitching, and it's almost like this compliment of like, hey, you know what? Jerry DePoto just went and did the hardest thing to do in baseball, which is find value in starting pitching. Like, you can't do it. Like, it is, because that is such a coveted thing, and Jerry has actually done it, and actually he's done it twice with the same team.
Do you think Marco Gonzalez sort of threw down the gauntlet in Boston? Did you hear the audio of him complaining about Boston and the tipping
stealing
the pitches,
the signals,
and stealing signs and all that stuff?
I did not.
Yeah, and he kind of sounded like Kip from Napoleon Dynamite, I thought, just the way that he was is enunciating it. And he's like, well, you know, I don't want to say anything. And then he went on to basically say that he thinks that they're stealing signs there. So anyway, it was he put himself out there, and it was like, okay, I better live up to it.
I want to hear it.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think, you know, making pitches and competing, and their swings look a little too good on some of those pitches. And, you know, that's how the game is.
You mean you say they look too good on those? Do you think tipping something and they knew it was coming?
Or? I'm not going to make accusations or anything. We've seen it from these guys time and time again. But yeah, I thought, you know, up and down the lineup after the fifth inning, I thought it looked a lot different out there.
Does it kind of sound like Napoleon's brother?
A little bit. Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
just,
right.
I'm just still really, not clear what he was.
He'd be the worst cage fighter of all time.
I'm just getting TO'd right now because she won't send me a full body shot. Yeah, I like how he says, you know, I don't want to say anything, but we all know what they're about here.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at it, though. I mean, what he did Friday night, 96 pitches, and I think he didn't have one batter that he went to a 3-ball count with, and 71 strikes out of 96 pitches. So, yeah, I probably would go with Dave, though, on LeBlanc being the biggest surprise, but Because Gonzalez last year, though, I wasn't sure if he was going to be that good. And then coming off the Tommy John and being another year removed from that, he certainly is.
Also, Marco Gonzalez is a guy that you've never said you could hit, whereas Wade LeBlanc and Mike Leake, you said you could hit.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So.
And thank you for not throwing me under the bus when Leake was out there at Edgar's Canteen. I appreciate that. Yeah, I don't.
Well, we did exactly what we would expect from you in the same situation.
No, Jim, you know what? I owed him one because he didn't go over there and be obnoxious with Chris Sale.
That's true, Dave.
Yeah.
You owe me more than one.
Yeah, I don't. Well,
you bought me a margarita.
I guess I'm buying rounds for the rest of the year.
Could be.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
Time to find out what we learned. It's brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
Jess!
Jess!
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Would you forget that part?
Yeah, I did. I was too busy trying to antagonize you.
Yeah,
I need to be welcomed
in. You're being ignored.
Hey, you know what's coming up after what we learn?
Seattle Sports Night?
Seattle Sports at Night.
Seattle Sports at Night.
At Night, yeah.
Yeah.
C-Rodge is a big deal.
You got a
rising star.
No.
Do you have do you have a new like intro music?
There is, and the big voice guy says my name.
Are you serious?
Oh. Yeah, which is that's a pretty big deal.
Clear
that's
you've made it. Deal.
Yeah.
There was also for a while Groz would do something for Nightwatch.
Yeah, he did the bang. We gotcha. Yeah.
We learned some things today. Beginning with following Turn Ahead the Clock Night, we learned about tattoos.
I was interested by the tattoos as well. I was really curious what that was. I thought it was a former girlfriend that was on his arm there.
It was a lion.
It was apparently a lion, as Stacy Ross said from 710sports.com. It was a lion with really good bone structure.
There was. Aslan, maybe? Is that from Narnia? I'm not sure.
Is that the name of the lion?
I think so. But I might be incorrect about that. I might not be up on my nerd game. I
wouldn't know a lion with bad bone structure from one with good bone structure, would you?
Well, I think what she meant was that it did kind of look like a woman from afar.
That it was a lion.
And then there was the flowing mane.
Yeah, because sometimes about an attractive lady, you would say a really good bone structure that would be there. So she was making the point that it was a good-looking lion.
I got it.
There's like 45 seconds of my life that I'd like to have back.
Oh, man, you had to live it twice, too.
Explaining to Jim what we meant by bone structure. No, I'm just kidding.
Henry Rollins.
It was actually entertaining.
Henry Rollins, the lead singer for Black Flag. Punk band.
Okay.
I'll take your word for it. He was an angry fella. He did some spoken word, and he talked about wanting to be able to sue people for, like, murder, but just a little bit. Because you wasted 45 seconds of my life. You killed that. But just a little bit. You're murdering my time.
It's actually pretty funny, because Jim thought that there were, like, certain lines that have good bone structure and certain lines that don't.
And he felt he was unable to tell the difference.
Yeah.
I was just trying to contribute to the conversation. Okay. I really was sitting here going, I don't have much to add to this, but I haven't said anything for a while, so maybe I should say something.
Should I say what you said in the book?
Do you have that happen sometimes?
Well, the timer goes that happen? Off? No, I'll just look at Danny and shake him off.
Yeah. I'd like to say what you said during the break. See, Raj, Jim's going to try to hold you off for another 4 years.
Yeah, he keeps telling me that just to give him some time.
I don't think it's going to happen, though. If we're at Emerald Downs and I'm ahead of you on the track, I can feel you coming. I can feel you coming.
Jim, you got a closing kick, though, don't you?
He's a closer. No, not to hold off C-Rod. Take the under on 4 years.
Jim's beating the hell out of the horse.
No, I'm not. No, I don't like it when they C-Rodge. I don't like it when they whip the horse. I don't like that. But
what if it's your job that's on the line, though?
No, I'll go ahead and lose. If I'm going to get displaced by somebody, I wouldn't mind if it's Curtis Rogers. I really wouldn't. He's, bear down, go Cougs. I love him.
The beta male's guide to job preservation.
Just pick somebody you wouldn't mind losing it to.
I will download the podcast and listen to Curtis Rogers in this spot while I'm in the unemployment office. I will. I will.
See, Rod, you got to be like Jim, too, and get cards, get business cards.
Yeah.
Like he has for Bark.
Yeah, he's all of a sudden rivers on business cards.
I saw that card that you gave me. It's sitting in the can at the Wyman household.
It worked. It worked. I gave a business card to the Albertsons checker there in the Renton Highlands, and she saw me the next day, and she said, Jim, I listened to a podcast of Bark's.
You really are the only podcast that has business cards with it.
No, that's not true. Brock has above and beyond cards.
Are you sure?
I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure.
You should see Jim pull that thing out of his sleeve. Oh, yeah. When he goes to shake hands, the card comes out.
Very slick.
I want Bark to work. I do.
Sure you do. Yeah, we all do.
Did you give one to John Stanton, too?
No, you gave one to Mike Leake.
You gave one to Mike Leake. He looked through Stanton's wallet.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
Making sure he didn't only have one.
You should have casually slipped one into the wallet as you were looking
through. Nah, that's a pro's move.
Okay. I'll try that this Friday.
Speaking of C-Rudge, we learned today that he's got some O'Neal in him.
We had an NBA player who's a 7-footer trying to attempt flying knees. Two of them. He's jumping through
Which
there.
Which player was that?
Thon Maker. Plays for the... Thon Maker plays for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, yeah, you know him, right, Dave?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dave. I asked him, was it Thon or Ton? Are you sure?
Thon.
Thon.
Thong?
Yeah, I like to call him Victoria.
Thon.
I like to call him Victoria's Secret because they are also Thon Makers.
C-Rudge,
very nice,
C-Rudge.
Thank you.
That had a touch of O'Neal to it, just a little bit of corniness. Well done.
Did you feel complimented there?
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of the standard bearer of all things pun around here.
All things corny?
That too.
Yeah.
So
even my mom ripped on me in a card she sent to these guys.
Really?
Yeah. We sent her flowers. Danny's sweet mom sent us a thank you note describing the flowers and the fragrance and whatnot, and then said, you know, what was her comment?
Something said, about like my presence was helpful, even my jokes.
Even your jokes, yeah.
Finally, today we learned about punishments.
But I got suspended or whatever you want to call it, grounded. I was grounded in my front yard.
You couldn't leave your front yard.
Leave the front yard because I hit Bobby Spilotta in the forehead with a rock.
Is this suspension the worst punishment school administrators ever came up with?
No. It's fun.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. You get days off.
Yeah. You go to the beach. Remember that when Davey Bamford, after he beat up Jason Story outside a volleyball game at Aptos High School, they suspended him for the week. He came back tan. Yeah, he did.
I went Bobby Spilotta, and Danny comes right back with Davey Bamford.
That's exactly right.
I was telling Jess out in the hall that actually my first kiss was Rhonda Spilotta.
Really?
Yeah, she was a sixth grader. I was a fourth
Hold
grader.
Hold on. It so was you kissed the sister of the dare. Guy you brained with a rock?
Yeah, and Jess goes, wow, you really got that guy. Got him twice.
Wait, a game of truth or dare.
Yeah.
And you kissed the sixth grader, and you were, what, nine?
Yeah.
How was it?
I felt like a playa, Jim.
Yeah, was it?
It was good.
Nice emphasis there on the no
How was
R.
it?
A player. I felt like a real player.
When was your first kiss, Jim?
I can't really remember. It was either Cheryl Cleave or Kim Potter. I think it was at like a Redmond Junior High dance. Yeah. But I should remember whether it was one or the other, but it was so long ago that I've forgotten.
Yeah. Mine is Angel Breedlove outside the Sacred Heart Auditorium in Plymouth
Wait, I'm
Falls.
Sorry. You've got Breedlove? Breezy Hove and Angel Breedlove?
That's correct.
Got a bunch of hippies?
Did Merlin introduce you to them?
No, but Merlin's back in Santa Cruz this weekend. Yeah, Angel Breedlove, 7th
That's
grade.
That's right. He has a Merlin, too. Who's not real, by the way.
Well, he's totally real, and he's fantastic.
How was
he's
it?
He's real, and he's
It was good. I grabbed her butt. She had her cheerleader skirt on.
You grabbed her butt, too?
What? Danny.
I know.
You naughty little.
Oh,
I know.
Goodness.
It's Catholic school upbringing.
Well done. Very well done, Danny.
That's going to do it for us. Thank you very much for listening. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow. Jessamyn McIntyre is our producer. Curtis Rogers is on the board. For the three of us, we'll talk to you tomorrow on Danny, Dave, and More.